The Unshackled Waves, episode 263.
Broadcasting from Melbourne, Australia, this is The Unshackled Waves with Tim Wills, brought to you by theunshackled.net.
Hello everyone, welcome to another Waves episode. As you know, one of the Patriot organisations we have covered extensively is the Proud Boys. It was founded in 2016 by alt-media personality Gavin McGuinness to be a Western fraternal men's organisation. The Proud Boys have been the main target of Antifa violence and media slander in the United States. They are a worldwide fraternity organisation which has chapters here in Australia. The Proud Boys were deplatformed from social media after the Proud Boys chapter in New York. They were subjected to political persecution after a confrontation with Antifa at the end of 2018. Gavin McGuinness stepped down to protect the Proud Boys. The Proud Boys elders they elected as their new chairman, Enrique Tarrio. He's a Cuban-American businessman from Miami, Florida, who has seen the Proud Boys return to full strength and resume their political activism. Lately, the Proud Boys have held two rallies in the city of Portland, Oregon, in an effort to draw attention to the fact that this is where the modern Antifa movement was formed and where it plans its domestic terror activities. To talk about the return of the Proud Boys and to cut through the fake news and smears against them, we are lucky to be joined by Enrique himself for today's show. Enrique, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir, so much for having me today. Really excited about this. Read your article, and I really wanted to interact with you after reading your article.
I'm glad you liked it, because as I said to you at the time, it was a week after the Portland anti-domestic terror rally, and it took me a week to just get all of the facts in there, to research it thoroughly. And I said to you that it's so hard to research and do real news now because the search engines always spit out all the fake news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think right now, and I check it probably 3 or 4 times a day. I check Proud Boys. I check Proud Boys Portland. I check my name to see what's coming up on the search. And like right after Portland, it's just like a barrage of like fake news. First article that comes up is how they caught me on like some hidden camera or whatever, which actually wasn't a hidden camera, saying that, oh, this is not the event for a fourth degree. And what I meant by that was this is an event that we're just going to go in. And if they go ahead and they attack us, we were just going to put our hands up. Was basically what I was saying with that. So yeah, it's just flooded with fake news. So I'm happy somebody just stops and is like, okay, let me decipher what's true and what's not. You know, you don't see that anymore.
No, unfortunately not. Or you have to actively go and seek it. And you mentioned the websites. You basically have to know which websites to go on, such as Zero Hedge or the Gateway Pundit. Otherwise, it's not going to show up in a search engine.
I don't know how Google, well, like we kind of already have seen how Google works, how their algorithm works. It favors the left immensely. Again, speaking about Portland and like search results, you know, basically all we did was show up, bend the knee in prayer, put our flag on the ground, sing our national anthem and leave. We were there for about 20 minutes.
Well, over the past year, the mainstream media and, of course, many politicians have done their most to destroy the Proud Boys. Now, you're the chairman of the Proud Boys. I should note that you're not the dictator because all the chapters are autonomous. But obviously, you started as just an ordinary member of the Proud Boys. So obviously, they had a big profile initially because Gavin McGuinness, a big media star. And yeah, so what attracted you to the organization?
I've been involved in politics for quite a long time, since I was very young. And I was always against groups, right? So it was strange that I joined a group, right? Because the first time first time a Proud Boy came up to me and was like, hey, do you want to join? I kind of knew who Gavin was. I wasn't I can't say I was a fan, like I watched his show or whatever. I would watch YouTube clips of Gavin, hilarious. But then they told me the name, and I was like, yeah, I kind of don't want to join this. But then that night I did my research, and I saw a whole bunch of false articles that I can tell that they were fake, so that interested me a lot. So by pure coincidence, like 2 days after that Proud Boy approached me, I had to go to a dinner for a local politician that was running, and that same Proud Boy was at that event. Went outside to smoke a cigarette with him, and he's like, man, you sure you don't want to join? And I'm like, you know what, I read about you guys and I kind of like what the tenets are about. What really drew me in was the glorify the entrepreneur, right? I'm a small business owner now. I've lost two businesses to this, but I was a small business owner, and that kind of like really appealed to me, because one of my core beliefs that I was raised with was the fact that like you kill your masters, kind of is what I've always, was always taught, not to be taken literally, but kind of not to have masters. And that includes like government entities, bosses, managers, and things like that. So like the path to like true freedom is taking control of your future and being a business owner, an entrepreneur.
Now, you're based in Miami and you grew up in what's known as Little Havana, which is where the Cuban exiles who escaped the Castro, a communist regime. And the Cuban Americans, they're very much, I admire them a lot, because they left communism. They appreciate the freedoms and opportunities that they've got in the United States. And yeah, they can't wait for the day that, well, the rest of their countrymen are free as well.
And that's how I was raised. I was raised very anti-socialist, anti-communist, very conservative from the beginning. I mean, the first time I voted for Bush's second term. So I've always pretty much, I mean, there's a few times that I've voted for independents or libertarians, but I've never voted left-wing at all. So I was raised to do this.
Did you, were you able to make it to the, when Fidel Castro dies, the celebrations in Miami? Were you there?
Yes. And it's funny that you bring that up. Nobody's ever brought that up. When Castro died, which, just to give you some pretense on that. So Miami has celebrated his death, like, I don't know, maybe like 15, 20 times before he actually died, because we would always get like news stories that he died, and everybody would go to the streets, right, and just party. And then we find out, oh, he's still alive. Oh, you know, I met one of our best, like one of our tightest members in our, we call our Miami chapter, we call it the Vice City chapter. It expands through three counties. And in our Vice City chapter that day, I met one of our most dedicated members at that. I can't even say demonstration, because it was so last minute. Like the news broke, and like 10 minutes later, people were on the streets with pots and pans. So had a great time. We were out there. I was like at, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night. I was in bed sleeping, and I woke up my girlfriend, and I'm like, yo, hey, we got to go over there, you know? And we're out in the streets till like 5 in the morning.
I think definitely Cuban Americans, they win the prize of best refugees to the United States.
I agree with that 100%. 100%, because we already come in. It's not that we come in with American values as much as we come in from knowing, you know, the dangers of socialism and communism. So we come in and we kind of just, on that flagpole, we bring down the Cuban flag. And we kind of go ahead and we raise the American flag, which is what my grandfather did when he got here. We've been through it. So we're seeing it with left-wing politicians in this country, with Democrats specifically, where they're opening up to socialism, you know, and that to us is extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, us, when I say us, is really Americans. It's really dangerous to Americans to even toy with the fact that we would have socialists in our government ranks.
Well, the young people today, most of them were born after the Berlin Wall fell, so they've got no idea what it's actually like.
If they continue on this path, they're definitely going to find out.
Yeah.
They're going to find out. They're going to find out the hard way. you can vote your way into socialism, but you're gonna have to shoot your way out of it.
Yeah, that's how it's normally done. Now, as you mentioned, you were politically active before you joined the Proud Boys. Now, obviously, based on what you're wearing on the show tonight, with it's a play on the Make America Great Again hat. It's the same type. It says "Make Commies Afraid of Rotary Aircraft Again," and your shirt is a Trump 2020 shirt, except it says "Because fuck you twice."
Your viewers are like, "Oh, that's a nice Trump shirt," and I was like, and "They're like, oh, it's not that nice."
Now, obviously, when Trump ran for the Republican nomination, there were 16 candidates in total. You obviously followed the primaries closely. Was Trump your first choice, or did you have another candidate?
Trump was my first choice off rip. I even have, well, not anymore. I don't have it anymore, but on my original Facebook account, I had in 2012 he had like this exploratory campaign, and I actually had a couple posts already supporting the president in 2012 when he was thinking about running for president. But I've been with him since like day one. I love Ted Cruz, but I knew off rip who was going to win that nomination.
And obviously, your home state of Florida, they voted for Trump in the Republican primary over the local Cuban American Senator Marco Rubio.
Yep, that was actually a surprise for me. I thought Rubio was going to take Florida, and he actually lost by double digits, which was unprecedented. Marco's love down here, not as much anymore, but Marco's love down here. So that came as a big surprise that a New York politician, not politician, but a New York candidate blew him out of the water.
I mean, he was a part-time Florida resident at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't marketed during that time. He wasn't marketed. He wasn't marketing his part-time residency in Florida. He was just being Trump, which is why he won.
Now let's return to the Proud Boys. Now, obviously, I know because I've researched it myself. I know the local Proud Boys here in Australia. Wikipedia describes it as a neo-fascist far-right organization that promotes political violence, which is, well, it's basically slander. Now, you mentioned the fourth degree. The degrees are known as hazing rituals. So I'll just give you the floor at the moment to explain what are the four degrees.
It's a regular question that we always get. So our first degree is basically repeat our credo. And if you want to know what that is, if your viewers want to know what that is, I encourage you to look into proudboysusa.com and do a little bit more research. So our second degree is more of a frat boy hazing ritual, which consists of five guys beating your ass until you say five breakfast cereals. It's not that serious. I mean, we don't go soft on you, but it isn't that serious of a thing. It does bring bonds with our local chapters, and like it puts you guys together because you're laughing after. Your third degree is your tattoo. You get a tattoo that says Proud Boys anywhere on your body. It doesn't have to be visible or anything like that. And then our fourth degree is probably like the most controversial one. And they always like to say that it's a thing of violence, and that is absolutely not true, and that has never been true. The fourth degree consists of a hardship. So an example that I always give is how I got my fourth degree. So the way that I got my fourth degree is during the events, we had a hurricane that came by in Texas by the name of Hurricane Harvey. And me and another member of my chapter woke up one morning while the hurricane was still on the ground in Texas. We loaded up the truck, we put a boat on the trailer, and we were out there for 5 days doing water rescues. That is what granted me my fourth degree. Although you can't, it's not like you get multiple fourth degrees. You get a fourth degree and that's it. But here's a perfect example of another hardship. So when I was in Portland on June 29th last year, I got an explosive thrown at me where I got hit with shrapnel, where it went into
Yikes.
my leg and into my arm. So those are two instances where, I got a fourth degree. I would have gotten the fourth at that point anyways, but it just means a hardship. It doesn't mean fighting. It doesn't mean anything like that. It just means a hardship for the Brotherhood.
Yeah, it's not seeking out some random Antifa supporter and punching them.
Okay, so here's another thing, that a way that you can't get a fourth degree. So this will expel that myth. You can't go looking for a fourth degree. You can't be like, oh, I'm going to show up and I'm going to instigate something, and then something's going to happen to me and I'm going to get a fourth degree. That's not how it works. Absolutely not how it works.
Like, if you're a firefighter, you don't win a bravery award for starting the fire yourself and putting it out.
Exactly. Perfect.
Yeah. My other question was, it's described as a misogynistic, patriarchal organization. Mm-hmm. Why does it choose to only admit men?
Really because of, like, our core activity. It's a men's group because we get out of the house and we go to the bar and we discuss things with the boys, right? It's like, it's that Saturdays are for the boys saying. So what ends up happening is we go out once a month with the guys and we drink, you know. And it's not like the women thing, because we have another group called the Proud Boys Girls. Women can join that, but it's not that it's a misogynistic thing, because if it was, like, women's clubs across the country would be sexist also. It's just that's how when men get together, they talk about different things. So we wanted to have a men's group. We didn't want to have women in there. And it's not because we think of women as less. Women are, they are our equals.
You're not getting together to drink and dream up plan ways to oppress women. That's not what happens.
And we also don't want to get together and plan weddings. You know, that's like, honey, what are we going to do for the wedding? What kind of roses? Like, I'm just trying to hang out with the boys today. It's once a month. You know, the other 29 days are family days and stuff like that. So we just want to get out of the house for one day.
Now, the Proud Boys became quite visible probably beginning in 2017, because not only you identify from the MAGA hats, but also the Fred Perry polo. It was basically patriot free speech rallies, just people wanting to demonstrate how proud they were to be American. But since Trump's election, the far left in the United States has become even more radicalized. And we've seen Antifa, obviously it started in Portland with Rose City Antifa, but it's spread everywhere. And because before Trump got elected, they said he was Hitler and a fascist, and so anyone who supports him is a fascist. And they believe that you have to use violence against so-called fascists. So simply waving American flags, saying you are for free speech, you were deemed a fascist. And so, well, the Proud Boys weren't official security, but were sort of making their presence there. And because obviously physical fitness and health is an important thing. Obviously, Proud Boys were the best at making sure the rest of the group were protected.
We don't go to, like, events to provide security under, like, official capacity. We just happen to be there. Because we want to defend this country and defend free speech, we put ourselves, like when the far left goes ahead and decides to get violent, we put ourselves in harm's way. How do I say it? We put ourselves in harm's way, not even, like, really thinking about it. Like, it kind of just happens. Like, that black and yellow just magnetizes to build that wall between the rally goers and the violent protesters. So it just comes naturally for us. That's why some people get the misconception that we're some type of, like, security group or militia or anything like that. We just don't want to see anybody get hurt. And we promote self-defense. And if that bothers anybody, that's fine. We're not going to apologize for that. We're never going to apologize for that.
Now, whenever Antifa showed up at these Patriot events and the Proud Boys made sure that they were kept at arm's length, that was the media narrative then became, or wherever the Proud Boys goes, violence follows. And this is, the media does the same thing in Australia. If there's a Patriot rally, and we don't have Antifa here, we have a group called the Campaign Against Racism and Fascism, they always counter protest, have to be held back by police. It's that basically you're blamed for provoking this response. It's a form of or victim blaming. It's basically the same as saying to a girl, "Oh, well, you shouldn't have worn that short skirt if you didn't want to be assaulted."
Yeah, of course. And you know what? I really don't care what they have to say. If they want to make that spin for clicks, fine. Let them promote us. That's cool. We'll continue to grow. If the mere presence of Proud Boys stokes violence in the hearts of people that are already violent, that's fine. We're going to continue to show up. I'm not afraid of what the media has to say. We've been slandered. I've been called a white supremacist. I've been called Nazi, Hitler, all sorts of stuff. It doesn't bother me. It's marketing for me.
Now, the media slander campaign really turbocharged after the New York Proud Boys confrontation with Antifa. Now, they're attending a Gavin McGinnis talk at the New York Metropolitan Republican Club, where he reenacted a Japanese assassination of a socialist politician on live TV. I'm not going to pronounce the Japanese names because I'll get them wrong, but they were under police escort at the end, and so all these precautions were taken, yet it was 4 Antifa appeared out of nowhere, and of course the Proud Boys didn't know what they were there, and so they defended themselves, and I think the whole confrontation lasted less than 10 seconds because the situation was then deemed safe.
And I'm going to defend my guys. You know, a lot of people ask me, oh, well, they were convicted. Yeah, they're basically political prisoners. I mean, they're not prisoners yet, but they'll basically be political prisoners in October because this was politically motivated. The police were there, saw exactly what happened. They saw that Antifa threw a glass bottle at our guys, and our guys defended themselves. And again, we're not going to apologize for it, you know. We're going to fight for our guys. We're going to fight for appeals. We're going to go ahead and we're going to continue to push this until we can't push it anymore. And we're going to continue going to our events. We're going to continue being who we are. We're going to continue going to the bar and drinking beer. But they weren't at fault here. They were innocent. They were innocent. If this would have happened in Florida, a judge wouldn't have even picked up the case. A judge would have tossed this case out. This is politically motivated by the governor and the New York City AG.
Yeah, I mean, you had the mayor, Bill de Blasio, and the governor, Andrew Cuomo, saying, you know, the police need to investigate this. We need to make sure that this political violence can't happen, basically ordering the police to investigate. And the absurd thing is that they never tracked down the 4 Antifa instigators. They didn't cooperate with police, and so they were originally called the New York Nine, but they could only really make charges stick to 2 of them because there were no victims. They charged them with attempted assault.
They charged them with attempted assault. They convicted them of the assault charges, but something that hasn't been spoken too much in the media is the jury found them justified in the assault. So basically what they said is it wasn't self-defense, but they went overboard. Even though the police were on the stand and said that there was no physical injuries to the parties there, the parties refused medical service, they refused to identify themselves, and they left. You know, so the cops are like, I mean, this is New York. They see fights all the time. They're used to, this tells you that they're used to letting these parties go, right? So this tells you even more that this is a politically charged. It was right before the election, by the way. A lot of people don't remember that. It was right before Cuomo's re-election campaign, which I don't know how he continues winning. He's driving that city to the ground. It's ridiculous, and it's a shame. And again, we're just going to continue to fight it, and we're not going to change who we are because of it.
Now, at the time that happened, Gavin McGinnis was set to tour Australia. It had been heavily promoted for quite a while. He even came on my show. But in response to this New York confrontation, there was a petition launched to deny him a visa to enter Australia, even though he'd never committed any crime. And that video compilation put together by Vic Berger, which basically puts all the sort of exaggerated, absurd things.
I'm just tweeting back and forth with them right now. I personally found my sock Twitter account right now, and they're trying to get it banned.
What horrible things did you say on it?
Oh, I didn't say anything. It was quite funny. He's like, "Oh, this is Enrique Tarrio's Twitter account." And like I have it like really hidden, and it says like parody account for Enrique Tarrio. And I just put like the Scooby-Doo thing that says "Ruh-roh." Yeah.
Let's see who you
But
really are.
yeah. But yeah, it's they started that petition with Gavin, and they're essentially denying him to go into the country. So we've gone from deplatforming in social media to like deplatforming from an entire country.
Well, that campaign against Gavin, it was done by a journalist, Rick Morton, who is employed by that far left media organization News Corporation. His coverage began when, because the Proud Boys in state of Queensland, they teamed up with another patriot group called the True Blue Crew against this sexual LGBT education program called the Safe Schools Program. They held a rally against that, and they got one of the local senators, Fraser Anning, to speak there. And this journalist, Rick Morton, wrote that Fraser Anning speaks at neo-Nazi rally, and he's the only justification he had for labeling it that is because there was a person who had at some point been associated with the True Blue Crew in another state and had been charged with threatening to blow up the local trade union hall, and so that was his link there.
Yeah, they always want to link things together, but perfect example of links that Antifa doesn't want to make, or they celebrate it, is that we had a firebombing attempt here at a ICE facility, an immigration facility, by an Antifa member, by a member of the John Brown Gun Club. And the media spun it for a couple hours and it was done. Here comes us to show up to Portland. It was trending on Twitter for longer than anything I've ever seen. It was trending for about 24 hours. You know, usually trends on Twitter only last about like maybe 10 hours, 12 hours. But it's crazy that, you know, a journalist has that much influence and power in local politics. And I have hope, because the reason why they have that power, they're losing it. I believe that we're winning this culture war. I believe that we're making a difference in like regular everyday people, and they're just going to keep getting pissed off. You know how pissed off they're going to be when the president wins in 2020? When this president right here wins in 2020, they're going to be pissed off. If you think they're crazy now, wait 2 years. Wait 2 years.
Well, you could add to that how pissed off Google and Facebook are going to be.
Yep. All those millions wasted, all that money lobbying is going to go down the drain in November of 2019.
Now, another consequence of the New York 9 investigation was that the Proud Boys were deplatformed from Facebook and Instagram. Earlier on, they'd been banned from Twitter, which really affected Proud Boys' recruitment. And, well, I know in Australia at least, there was a lot of members of the Proud Boys. They were supportive of the organization, but they were just like, "Dude, like, this is too much with my work and family. Like, it's nothing personal, but I've just got to withdraw." And so the Proud Boys really took a hit from basically all the social media companies ganging up on you.
We did take a hit. I'd say it took us a little while to adapt to that hit. We're back at full steam right now. People know where to find us. People know how to Google us, the website. You know, and I can't tell you that I'm mad at those people that you know, felt like they wanted to put their families first, you know, because that's really what we're about. We're, you know, I have people that are like, "Oh man, I'm so sorry, I can't come to the meeting." I'm like, "Don't apologize for that." Like, you know, because they have to go to like dinner with the wife or whatever. We always put those things first, and that's kind of what's different about us. We don't take ourselves too seriously, even though we take what we do seriously. Across history of the world, people that make a difference, like activists that make a difference. Not all Proud Boys are activists, though. Most Proud Boys actually just want to just get out of the house for a weekend and drink beer. The history of the world, people that go against like the establishment are usually labeled like the dregs of society, you know, and they're kicked off like social media. They get kicked out of restaurants and all of that, and they always end up winning somehow. Like the non-violent ones always end up winning. The violent ones usually die off. But the non-violent ones usually just continue and thrive and win. And that's what we're doing. We're adapting every day. They've deplatformed us off of everything. We went ahead, we got on our own platform. Now we use a third-party software made by some guy that's on the run from the government, of the Russian government. We have solutions like Parler, Telegram, credit card processors have thrown us off, PayPal. We've made our own credit card processor, and we're currently beta testing a PayPal competitor that we have in the works right now. Thank you. Well, that demonizes, you know? We're literally building our own platforms from the ground up.
Yeah, I'd love to get an update on how that goes because who knows, we may need to use it here at the Unshackled in the future.
We'll be releasing that soon. We already have the credit card processing system up, and I'll give you when we sign off, I'll give you the URL so you can push it or use it yourself. You know, you could use it for personal. You could use it in Australia, obviously. You could use it for personal reasons. You could use it for your business. You could use it for your e-commerce store. We got it all taken care of.
Nice. Now, I mentioned that obviously a lot of Proud Boys felt they had to quit after the slander campaign following the New York Nine, but the most high profile one was Gavin himself. He thought that him stepping away would alleviate the persecution of them, and also because, well, he was being terrorized in his own neighborhood by like neighbors who said that he was running a fascist organization, and his wife, who he'd been with for many years. I watched the ABC Nightline segment, and you could tell that, you know, she was very upset about what happened, and you could tell that, you know, Gavin, it's sort of, I need to look after you first. Even though he is a big star worth millions of dollars, he's still got a family and he's human. It's
Not a
not nice.
person. I can tell you, Gavin did help the New York guys by stepping down. It did help them immensely because it proved that we're autonomous, right? It completely proved that we're autonomous. And like you said, there's a big difference between a chairman position, like a dictator or president. A president or dictator has, you know, like executive powers where they can go, hey, this is what I want you to do. If you don't do it, you're out. Or with no threat, this is what I want you to do. And I can't do that. Like, if I do that, I think our guys would have a shit fit if I told anybody what to do. I don't involve myself in personal chapter business. I really don't care about that. I just try to organize what we have as best as I could, to the best of my ability. And I've made this a full-time job. At first, I was like, damn, this is my life. And now I see it and I'm like, damn, I'm pretty happy. You know, I'm really happy with what I'm doing. I'm a lot more content now than I was before.
You had a large vacuum to fill because there was a brief period of anarchy. One of the former Proud Boys, Jason Van Dyke, he's a lawyer and decided to make himself chair and that he owned all the Proud Boys intellectual property. So that looks a bit more of a mess.
I think there's also there's a misconception of how that happened. That actually happened exactly how it was supposed to. For legal reasons, we had Jason Van Dyke take the wheel for about 48 hours until we did the actual voting and everything came in. And I actually wasn't in the position to run. I didn't want to run. I didn't want the position. And everybody kind of just put my name in the hat, and I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'll say it. I'll run for the position. I didn't even want the structure, period. And I end up getting the chairman position just from one day between 24 hours of I'm like, okay, I'll run for the position to actually happen. It was 24 hours, which I didn't think I was going to even win. So I think there's a little bit of information out there that was a little false when it came to Jason. I talked to him here and there, but he had no bad intentions or anything. It's just that's how it had to work out. So in order for us to have the structure that we have today.
Yeah, you could tell that I got that information from probably one of the fake news articles.
Yeah. And it's not difficult, because sometimes it's really difficult to decipher what's going on and what's not. Here's the thing, even like some right wing, and this kind of shows you who we are, even some right wing outlets don't like defending us much. You know, it's not like we're not disliked by the left or the right. We're disliked by the establishment conservatives, the establishment left, and obviously the far left hates us. And it's really because of how effective we are at doing what we do.
Well, there was a lot of outrage that you were at the Conservative Political Action Conference this year, and much was made of your photos with Senator Ted Cruz, Rick Scott, the Florida governor, and Donald Trump Jr. Did they know like who you were? There was no like panic afterwards, like, oh no, we've been...
There's no panic at all.
That's great.
I can't tell you. It's like I sat there and had like a whole cocktail with them and spoke to them about how we're gonna play golf or whatever. It was a simple conversation. I got to talk to Don Jr. about like the censorship of conservatives, and Ted Cruz. I got to briefly mention the issues that we have with Antifa. You know, it's not like some big conspiracy theory. There's a story out there that said that I was going to the White House, that the president had like personally invited me to the White House, which
I'd love that. Yeah, that'd be great.
I wouldn't, you know what? I wouldn't doubt that he'd do it. But it just hasn't happened.
But it sounds like Ted Cruz, given that you said you spoke to him about Antifa, he was the first one to put the intention to move the motion in the Senate to list Antifa as a terror organization. And if you've like played a part in alerting him to that, then that's fantastic.
I mean, I guess like if it was like a 0.01% of the push, I think what really pushed him was the Andy Ngo situation. That was the straw that broke the camel's back for him. Nobody wants to see that. And shortly after, a couple of days after the Andy Ngo situation, I put out a petition with zero platform, no Facebook, no Instagram, no Twitter, no nothing. I think I have like 700 subscribers on my Telegram, and we were able to get together 45,000 signatures out of the 100,000 that I needed with no platform. So like, imagine if we had the platform, we would have had an official response. And then just like about a week or two after we started that petition, Ted Cruz went ahead and proposed a bill.
The great thing about under your leadership, the Proud Boys bouncing back, it's also pleasing that there's been scrutiny on Antifa finally. I mean, there's obviously the Antifa suicide attack on the ICE facility in Washington State, that got a lot of coverage, but there was also that other attempted shooting at an ICE facility in San Antonio, Texas, and the Andy Ngo assault, obviously, that disgusted many people.
Dayton, Ohio was a member of Antifa, too.
Yes. So there has been much more scrutiny on Antifa, who are actual instigators of violence. And because in Australia, we're called the far right, we were affected significantly by the Christchurch mosque attack, because the killer was Australian and he did it in the name of white nationalism, and so there was a real crackdown on a lot of nationalist and patriot groups here. But we all disavowed him, like said, you know, this is abhorrent what you did. But the difference with Antifa in the United States is the ICE suicide attack, he was made a martyr. They said, you know, he was doing a noble thing. Antifa don't disavow their terrorists, they actively encourage it.
Yep, the left pretends that it never happened, and then we get blamed for stuff. Like, I had an interview the other day with a big news station that's supposed to come out next week, and they're like, oh, but why don't you disavow white supremacy? And I'm like, okay, I'll do it for you. Are you guys recording? You know, like, I'll do it right now. Violence, right? White supremacist violence and Antifa violence, I go ahead and I'll disavow those. Like the regular protesters, like Antifa, whatever, if you want to wear a mask and just hold a sign, I don't care what you want to do. Just stand there and hold your damn sign. Not my problem. Not my monkey, not my circus. But the violence is where I find them to be as equally reprehensible. You know, I can go ahead and I can sit here. They won't do this. If you had Antifa sitting right here, they can't do this. I can go ahead and be like, hey, I disavow the Dayton, Ohio shooter because he's a domestic terrorist. And then I disavow Antifa because they're domestic terrorists because they try to blow up an ICE facility. And I also disavow the El Paso shooter, which was a white supremacist. I can do that. They can't. They could be like, oh, yeah, I disavow the El Paso white supremacist shooter. And I'm like, okay, can you disavow the other two? They're like, I don't know. They'll just, like, slide off camera.
Yeah, I saw your CNN interview with Sarah Snyder. That was done live from the Portland and domestic terror rally. And she was basically dying, asking you about, you know, white supremacy and ask you about El Paso. And you're like, yeah, of course I disavow white supremacy and the El Paso shooter. And like, you're clearly, because there's this term white Hispanic, but you're clearly a brown Hispanic. Like, yeah. Your skin color is visible. And I'm amazed you didn't say to her, like, you know, if I was in that Walmart in El Paso, Texas, the shooter would have tried to kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's true. Now, I'd like to have a moment of silence for Sarah, because I completely destroyed her and wrecked her. So I'm just going to bow my head a second. Okay, I'm done. She tried so hard. And one of the things that some people didn't see on that interview is that she completely rendered me invisible. She's like, I've spoken to many, and I hate this term, but I'm just reversing the term so she understands. But she's like, I've spoken to many people of color. I'm like, you mean like me? If that's the term you want to use, am I not? Because of my views, do you see me as like a white dude? So I knew I did all right in the interview. I didn't think I did that good. But then when I watched it again, I'm like, oh, she didn't come prepared for that, you know, at all.
I mean, if she wanted to just speak to a whiter organization that day, she should have spoken to Antifa. I mean, they're very white.
I did not see any, besides the dude that was shirtless. I don't know if you noticed that guy.
Oh, yes, yes. He was quite visible.
I didn't see any other Antifa that weren't white, those black bloc protesters. I didn't see any that weren't white. You know, and you can see what color they are. I mean, it's hard to tell because all you see is like this little area right here.
Mm.
You're completely covered with gloves and masks and stuff like that. We don't hide our face. We put our face right in front of the camera. I don't care. They're like, oh, well, it's better if you're covered. No, that's fine. If everything were to go south, something were to happen to me because I didn't hide my identity, I'd be fine with that.
Now, after that CNN interview, Sarah, she crossed back to the studio, and now I couldn't find the name of the anchor, but I think because she knew that you couldn't respond because the interview was over, she's like, we should remind our viewers that the Proud Boys are designated a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And of course, she said it like...
She did that?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't you see the end of that?
No, I didn't see it. I didn't see that.
No, that was right. That was right at the end in the official CNN video that I saw.
What I find funny too is, did you notice when I asked her? I'm like, no, she's told me something, and I'm like, well, there hasn't been violence on our side, and she's like, well, there hasn't been violence on the other side either. I'm like, it's her camera, it's me and her, and then the other side is like a live helicopter view of like this giant riot that's happening like right before our eyes. You got to rewatch that so you can see it. It is insane.
It's amazing that the Southern Poverty Law Center, or as another one of my guests described it, the Southern Poverty Lie Center, like mainstream media still, they're the go-to authority for what is a hate group. And of course, Gavin, given that, well, after he quit the Proud Boys, he got fired from his job at Blaze TV. He'd nearly lost everything. And so because he's still got quite a large amount of resources, decided to launch legal action against the Southern Poverty Law Center. Because if you go on their site, they list so many different organizations as hate groups, like even the Mises Institute about Austrian economics is considered a far-right, dangerous organization. And so there needs to be more to call that out. And thankfully, Gavin's bounced back now. He's got his new TV platform, freespeech.tv. He's got Milo and Ann Coulter and a few other media exiles on there. So it's good that he's doing better.
Yeah, he's done amazing with freespeech.tv. It's actually Gavin uncensored like he was before. And I find it a lot more entertaining too. And then he's brought in, like you said, he's brought in all these names, Joe Biggs, Milo, Ann Coulter, Roger Stone. So he's done really good, and that again shows you the spirit of the entrepreneur. Now it's his house, and he gets to run it however he wants.
And how is the lawsuit progressing? Because another thing people don't know is the Southern Poverty Law Center, it's going through internal turmoil with a lot of departures, and they have a terrible internal structure at the moment.
We'll have an update for you guys on that next month. It's working out. The motors are kind of slow right now because of funding and things like that, but I'll have an update for you guys and I'll come back on your show and we'll talk a little bit more about the SPLC. But next month, I'll have a little bit more news on that.
The rally where Andy Ngo got assaulted in Portland, that was the annual Patriot Prayer Rally, which is one of the local patriot groups. But that's held every year, but the Proud Boys decided to go back to Portland earlier this month for this special End Domestic Terror rally. One of the things that I didn't think that you quite nailed in the interview with Sarah is like, why come back? Like, because you're from Miami, it's on the other side of the country. Why come all that way? Because she mentioned the loss to business and the law enforcement expense, and there are also all the other agencies there. And your response was, oh, I have the right in the United States to travel where I want. I think you need a bit more sort of, like, should have had a bit more of a justification for that.
Yeah, what I was trying to say to her at that point was the reason why we were in Portland is you said it earlier on the show, and again, I didn't really. There were so many things that we were talking about that I probably didn't say things the right way, but the reason why we picked Portland is for what you said a little while ago. It's the heart of Antifa, it's Rose City. We went to go raise awareness, and the rally's name is called End Domestic Terrorism. So the heart of Antifa is in Portland, where Ted Wheeler has allowed that to fester. Another thing that I didn't articulate very well, was the $2 million that was spent wasn't because of us. The $2 million was spent because of the hype behind this rally, right? Because we decided to have it, and then Ted Wheeler came out and did many press conferences about this rally. He had this big community event where all the business owners came, and he basically told them to shut down their businesses that day. He was putting them in fear. He's like, "Oh, these Proud Boys are coming." And then he decided that he needed so much for these presents because he had already hyped this up. So the media was taking it. The media was calling him. He didn't know what to do, and he called all the police, 11 different agencies from across the state, plus the state police, plus the National Guard, the FBI, and a whole bunch of three-letter agencies. And he was the one that cost that city $2 million. All we needed was a small police presence in front of the park, because all we did was come in, pray, plant our flag, sing the national anthem, and be gone 20 minutes later.
If you actually seek out the footage of the recent Portland rally yourself, you can see that. Of course, YouTube tries to make it difficult to find, and mainstream media, what they snip it up to make it look like, or violence on both sides. But the evidence is it's out there for you to view, where all the aggression came from.
Our guys didn't even have to defend themselves. We basically walked in and walked out unscathed. And we
Yeah.
walked out in the most epic fashion ever. We walked out through this bridge that was completely closed to the public. Police had opened it just for us, and it was this awesome, like, energy power walk, this power march that we had. And it just felt like victory. It tasted like victory because it was victory.
I think if Portland residents, if they're worried about the effect on business and city expenditure, then they should be angry with the mayor for allowing a terrorist cell to operate in the city and basically plan their acts of violence all over the United States.
Yeah, he was so worried about these boogeymen that were coming from across the country to converge on his city and commit acts of violence. He didn't have to look that far. He didn't really have to be like, oh, these people are coming in. He should have been worried about the people within his own city that are trashing the place, beating up journalists, burning cars down, breaking windows, and just destroying the city. And that's why I said we were basically a 500-man spotlight, you know, to shed light on what's going on in the city. And I'm sorry to say it to Ted Wheeler, but we're coming back.
Unless he wants to create a wall around Portland and declare it's a Republic of Antifa.
Yeah, he could build a wall. It'd be tough for me to jump it. I probably won't go in. I probably won't be able to get in. So that's actually a great point. You know, Ted Wheeler, build a wall.
And hopefully that would mean the Antifa don't come out. Yeah. Like have U.S. border people on the other side.
You know what? That might be a better idea than making a border wall with Mexico. Wrap it around Portland and then bring it down past California. And we'll just close off California also while we're at it.
So you're actually not too keen on the wall, because that was what Antifa was bragging about in the aftermath, that, oh, we raised $35,000 to help Latino immigrants to the United States. So suck on that.
Yeah, I think that was a complete lie. Like, where did they get that money from? They're like, oh, they deposit. Like, I haven't seen like a funding page or anything of how they raised these 35. I mean, I might be wrong. Maybe they did, you know, maybe they did raise $35,000. I highly doubt that they raised $35,000. They said that they'd raised $20 or $15 per patriot that shows up. Thankfully, you raised 35,000 bucks. I think it's a complete and utter lie.
What are the Proud Boys' actual views on immigration to the United States? Because obviously after El Paso, they said, Trump is a white nationalist, his immigration policies are about keeping America white. But we've already made clear, and like you're the leader of it, that membership of the Proud Boys, that's open up to men, biological men of any race or sexuality.
Yeah, we don't ask you what your color or religion or where you're from before you join. So everybody always asks me like to speak for Proud Boys. Like, they ask me questions. There's some things I could answer as a group, but we don't have that groupthink mentality. That's why I love our organization, because it's diverse, right? So, and I don't say that to be an SJW, like saying, oh, we're so diverse, because I don't even have to say that. That's retarded. We're diverse in thought, right? So, like, my personal solution on immigration is start. It's a step program, because you have to do things in certain steps. You can't be like, this is the solution that we're going to have. My solution is step one, build the wall and stop illegal immigration, right? As much as you can. You know, they're like, oh, somebody will put a ladder. Okay, yeah, one person will put a ladder. 10,000 people won't put a ladder. You know, like, who's going to carry a ladder across a desert? Like, it's hard enough to get across and get across the river with like a 50-foot extension ladder.
Well, there was a story a few days ago how some illegal immigrants were stopped at the U.S. border because of the wall. And because they were there for so long, that's when ICE officials were able to identify them, so the wall worked.
Yeah, of course. So my first step would be build a wall, stop illegal immigration. My second step would be, because you can't dig your heels on the ground and be like, this is how it is. I think that we have to open up, not open up our border crossings, but I think we have to open up like some type of visa for like a work permit, you know, so for you to get across so you can work. Because let's be honest, these people aren't trying, like, I'm putting myself in their shoes. They're not trying to cross the border to destroy. They're not trying to destroy the country, you know, but they're crossing the border because they want a better life for their family. They want to send them back money or whatnot and just reap the benefits, right? They're doing the best they can for their family, right? So those people that want to come by and work, maybe there's a program. I'm not a professional. I'm not a legislator. I don't know the perfect solution to it, but at least some type of way that we can have people with vetting that we can let them in and work, like a work visa or something like that, something along those lines. So those are things that I think that we need to work together with moderates with a common sense solution, but I'm not willing to negotiate without closing that border and stopping illegal immigration. So that first step has to happen in order for all the other steps to happen.
Yeah, because if you don't have a proper border, then bad people can just walk in. I mean, the great thing about, well, controlled immigration, it doesn't mean end immigration. It just means that you can choose that the right people are coming in.
Yeah, of course. So again, like, I have zero compromise on that. In order for us to be the welcoming country that we've always been, we have to close the border. No illegal immigration, period.
Now, as we've already discussed, obviously, Donald Trump, he is looking at designating Antifa an organization of terror, mentioned Ted Cruz's Senate motion. Neither of those people have condemned the Proud Boys, but that probably means that the 2020 election race is so crucial, because obviously we saw what happened in New York. A Democrat president and a Democrat Congress, they could designate you as a organization of terror and flip the tables and really persecute you.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not going to say it's not. When they have something on their political agenda, they can't stop it. But they're going to have a really tough time doing that with us. And they're going to have a bunch of lawsuits if they try to do it to us. It clearly states, like, in our bylaws, and it clearly states in everything that we do, you know, you could go through hours of YouTube videos on us about self-defense. We'll take it to the Supreme Court if we have to. If all of us have to pitch in to make that happen, we'll make it happen. But I don't see that happening. For one, the president's going to win in 2020, but just in case 2024 happens, I don't see it happening. Honestly, I feel like a lot more Americans are waking up right now. And right now, Republicans should be, even though they should be focused on working this 2020 election, I think Republicans, in their mind, they're playing 4D chess. They're already working for 2024, you know? And if Democrats don't step up, because I think it's likely that we'll see a Democratic president in 2024, but if the left keeps going the way they are, if they don't course correct, they're going to lose in 2024 too.
Yeah, if the squad gets any more members, that's going to be a disaster for them.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And the Proud Boys are going to continue to grow. This past week, this Portland event that we had has swelled our numbers. In my personal chapter, it's increased our numbers by about 25%, if not more, by this time. So we're just going to continue to expand. We're going to continue to get bigger. And, you know, who knows when some of our Proud Boys, I mean, we have Proud Boys in Congress, but who knows when the Proud Boys that are now decide that they want to run for Congress, they want to run for to be a congressman, they want to run to be a senator, you know? With the values, with our values aligning perfectly with the working class American family, I won't tell you that it's not a possibility.
Yeah, I definitely love that. Well, as I already said, you've survived the worst. They've thrown everything they can at you over the past year, but as you mentioned, people are still finding out about the Proud Boys and being attracted to it. So you're certainly coming up trumps, to use a pun.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And they say deplatforming works. I beg to differ. They're talking about us now more than ever.
Well, it's been great to chat to you today and you to tell our audience directly what's been going on in the Proud Boys. And yeah, look forward to seeing you out in public again sometime soon.
Yeah, you'll see me very soon. And I hope to be on your show again. And maybe you could bring me back on when we have more information on the SPLC.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you for giving us a voice. And who's ever watching this, you got to subscribe, like, and share to this channel.
And that's the show for today. There's a lot of other major news stories I'm intending to bring you an episode about. There's the Bolsonaro revolution in Brazil, the continuing China crisis, and the New South Wales abortion debate. So plenty to stay tuned for. Don't forget to catch up on the latest episodes of Detonation at the Unshackled YouTube channel, hosted by my colleague Steel Archer. He continues to keep pumping the episodes out, putting my production efforts to shame. There is also a new episode of The Uncuckables out, which is our joint production with The XYZ and The Rational Rise. It is on its dedicated YouTube channel, broadcast every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time. And now I'm pleased to announce that you can view the archive of Uncuckables episode at its new website, theuncuckables.com. And another big announcement is the launch of RationalRise.tv under the direction of James Fox Higgins, editor of The Rational Rise. It is a new video streaming alternative to the increasing censorship and deplatforming on YouTube. It features not just James's content, but also the XYZ back catalogue. Subscriptions, they begin at $5 per month, with the proceeds going to support independent media in Australia. Remember to counter the fake news and algorithm manipulations, as I mentioned in this show, that is making it increasingly hard for me to find what's really going on in the news, which is why you need to use alternative search engines such as duckduckgo.com, and for your information needs, please use Infogalactic. There is also free speech social media, which The Unshackled has a presence on, where you're on gab.com/theunshackled. We are also on minds.com/theunshackled. We're at miwi.com/p/theunshackled. And we also have our growing Telegram channel, which the Proud Boys are on, and we are at t.me/theunshackled. Remember, for us to stay online and to reach as many people as possible and continue to produce the amount of content that we do, we need your support. And of course, the best form of support is supporting us financially. We're at patreon.com/theunshackled. We're also at paypal.me/theunshackled. We also have our premium membership option on our website, theunshackled.net/membership, as well as our web donation form at theunshackled.net/donate. We are also on subscribestar.com/theunshackled. And of course, we have our online merchandise store featuring our most popular products at theunshackled.net/store. So thanks once again for your company, and we'll see you very soon for the next show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Unshackled Waves. Please visit theunshackledwaves.net for all the ways to subscribe and follow the show. Don't forget to pick up your free ebook at theunshackledbattlefield.net, and keep checking out theunshackled.net for all the latest news and commentary.